Why is it so hard today for some to see Jesus as God incarnate? And why was it so hard for the Jews in Jesus' day? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host, and with me are my two conversation partners, Paul Dibdall and Dave Thomas from the School of Theology. And I would like for us to continue our discussions of the teachings of Jesus and focus on the Son himself today with that leading question. Why is it so hard for some to see Jesus as God incarnate, and why was it so hard for the Jews in Jesus' day? Now, my partners here suggested that I should tell my own story to begin with here, and I've been trying to figure this out, and I think I finally sorted out. The pictures of Jesus pleading his blood to the Father had given me the impression that Jesus was my friend. But he had to talk long and hard to convince the Father, who was a bit more reluctant. And if he really talked long and hard, the Father would finally say, all right, let him in the back door. Next. See? that was the picture that I had. And so I finally, when I was a second year student at the seminary at Andrews University, a graduate of Walla Walla College School of Theology, fourth generation Seventh-day Adventist, I'd used all the right words. He was divine, he was the Son of God, and all those kinds of things. But I was just terrorized by the question, if the Father loves me, why do I need a mediator? That was the question that I faced. And so I took a seminar quarter and faced the whole thing and discovered John 14-17. If you have seen me, you've seen the Father. From my experience, that was just a huge burden rolled off my soul, because if God himself came down here to show me that he really wants to save me, then he really must want me in his kingdom. And I remember walking across the campus at Andrews University, Paul, your father was a colleague of mine there, and I was just bubbling over, and I said, guess what, John? I discovered that Jesus is God. And he discovered that a long time ago. But
I hope he was diplomatic with you, Alden.
I don't know. But I'm wondering if the two of you could maybe add your own personal PS. Maybe that was never a struggle for you, but it certainly was for me.
No, I think in response to the first question, why is it so hard today for some to see Jesus as God incarnate, is that we tend, I think, to be very dismissive of the metaphysical possibilities. In other words, this requires a realm other than the physical realm, and an interaction between the supernatural and the natural, and, you know, a commingling of them in this case. If Jesus has actually come from the realm of God and he now is living as a human, that doesn't seem to fit very well with what's ordinary. I mean, we don't see things like that. We don't have that ability to reach up to God, so to speak. And so I think, you know, I think that's one reason why people see it hard, and why it's hard for them to see that you're asking for something out of the ordinary here, significantly out of the ordinary. Yeah.
And I think the other factor is that ordinary people, you think Father, Son, Father always comes first, Son comes second, so how in the world could they be equal? Paul, did you have...
It was less of a kind of struggle for me, less than what you described, Alden. And I think part of it for me was that my view of God the Father was less harsh than it sounds like your understanding was. So I never thought of God the Father as somehow being the, you know, the aloof, the scary one in Jesus, mm-hmm. and the friendly one. So this realization, and I do remember, I mean, there was some distinction in my mind. I did think of Jesus as being more friendly and more kind, but there wasn't that great gulf. So the recognition that Jesus was God incarnate was not as large mm-hmm. a kind of paradigm shifting truth for me.
You know, as I listened last week when the two of you described the very positive views you had of your own mm-hmm. father, I'm wondering if that might be part of the story, because sure. my father's father was a mess. I mean, he didn't land in jail, but he could have. And I think that my call to ministry, I told my dad finally at one point, my call to ministry was probably his call, but he couldn't go into ministry because of what his father had done. And what he'd said, because I really wasn't able really to talk to my father very much. We would chat. I would send him something I'd written. But he would never talk about the world of ideas. He could mark a few misspellings, but the world of ideas, that was very difficult. And I mentioned this to him one day, and he says, well, my father never talked to me. Mm-hmm. And my father was very imperious. So my guess is that some of this has to do with the shaping of our early homes.
I think so.
Well, let's take a turn now and look at why it was so hard in Jesus' day. If you look at the messianic expectations of the Jewish people at the time of Christ, it's clear that everyone expected a Messiah, but not the kind of Messiah that Jesus was preaching and teaching. On at least two counts, Jesus' Jewish audiences took exceptions. One, that the Messiah was God incarnate, and two, that the Messiah was to suffer and die. And we may want to look at the messianic prophecies, but I'd like to focus on that question. The Jewish people desperately wanted someone to deliver them. And from their standpoint, the Messiah was simply one in the line of David, human, see. But the other one, to think that this Messiah would suffer and die, wow.
Yeah, and I guess I would add a third, maybe a less kind of theological one here, but I think it was difficult for them because of the kind of life that Jesus lived. And I realize you're kind of getting at that with these questions, but I would not expect God incarnate to come, to be born, to live in a lower class home, in a lower class city, basically Nazareth, and then not to do any kind of public ministry. I mean, there's nothing that happens for 30 years. And when Jesus begins his public ministry, the response of his community that knew him best was not, oh, we always knew there was something special about that guy. Oh, the boy, what a great carpenter he was. We always knew. They thought, who does he think he is? We know his family. We know who he is. So it's difficult to think of the person next door as God incarnate, especially when he lives as mm-hmm. Jesus lived.
Mm-hmm.
Tough.
Yeah.
I think for those of us that have been raised as Christian, the more difficult thing is to accept Jesus' humanity, his full humanity. I think we have kind of a plastic divine Jesus that we've accepted, but his humanity is more of a struggle. I'm probably getting us off track, Alden.
No, that's
so back
all right.
to your back to
no,
your
I want to simply focus on that.
But
why is it such a tussle? Why was it tussle back there? And you have this mysterious blending, supposedly, of the human and the divine.
But you're watching him work on wood every day, and you know his family. That would be a struggle then to say, he's the one. Mm-hmm. There's the one.
And then add to that, one of the things that Jesus did that nobody else had done was to apply the suffering servant song of Isaiah 53 to Jesus' ministry.
Right.
I mean, when Jesus says, I am the one who could suffer and die, people said, no, you got it all wrong.
That's the wrong, yeah.
And in that connection, did it take the resurrection to turn that around? Because there's no evidence that either the disciples or the people accepted Jesus as the Messiah. And, you have that famous line on the road to Emmaus, we had hoped.
Hope, right.
Past tense, we had hoped.
I think that was the turning point for them. Mm-hmm. Then they look back with new eyes following mm-hmm. the resurrection. Mm-hmm. But without that, there was not widespread recognition at that point.
Yeah.
Until after the resurrection.
In fact, you'd be hard-pressed to find anyone in the audience, among the disciples or his audience, that said, yes, the Messiah shall come and die. And even the conviction that the Messiah was God, it took 300 years of Christian dialogue, going back and forth, before they finally came to that conclusion.
And what do you make of the talk we hear all the time about the expectation of a political deliverer, the hope of a Messiah or the promise of a Messiah was linked to the I've heard that all over the place, but I don't know if people are just overplaying that. It seems it seems like we as human beings, when we are in a bit of a predicament or when we've been overrun by someone or some place, that we are looking for a temporal redeemer, somebody who will come and get us out of that predicament. See, and so
well, I think that's particularly true of the Jewish situation. In Old Testament history, we just finished reading the books of the Maccabees and the violation of the temple there, and they were under the Romans desperately wanting to be. And you can go to the Old Testament and find the messianic prophecies that, you know, it's going to come and beat up on our enemies. Mm-hmm. And here comes this Jesus and says, no, I can suffer and die. Mm-hmm. I would be delighted to find out, Scripture doesn't tell us, how in the world Jesus, in his own study and his walk with God, how in the world he discovered Isaiah 53 and applied it to his own ministry. Because it's not described as messianic. It's just the suffering servant. Mm. It's there, you see. That has intrigued me no end, how Jesus discovered that aspect and simply overlooked all the conquering heroes aspects and is focused on that. Mm. Paul, do you teach some of this stuff, I know. What kind of reaction do you get from the students when you deal with the hope of the Messiah?
Well, we do. We talk about how our expectations, I think this is true not just with the coming of the Messiah, but God's work in history. We tend to, well, religious people tend to study the scriptures and come up with almost like formulas that they then try to, well, they come up with formulas that they expect God will fill.
Yeah.
And it seems like human beings have been very poor at discerning God's work in history, partly because we think we know exactly how he's going to do it, and then God does it in surprising ways.
Yeah, so. And right there, and we'll probably have time just to tuck in another C.S. Lewis quote here. In his Grief Observed, he says, "My idea of God is not a divine idea. It has to be shattered time after time. He shatters it himself. He is the great iconoclast. Could we not almost say that this shattering is one of the marks of his presence? The incarnation is the supreme example. It leaves all previous ideas of the Messiah in ruins."
Well, that was a striking thing when I first read that. My idea of God is not a divine idea. Yeah. That's quite an admission. So.
If we can just remember that we're human, and it, you know, my list almost never compares the same with God. So Jesus clearly was the Son. He was God, and that's a hard truth. Well, my thanks to Dave and Paul for participating in our conversation. Next week, we will talk about the Holy Spirit. My thanks also to David Olson, our program engineer, and for all of you for listening in. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.